Right after the war in 1919, I am told by someone who knew Rudolf Steiner back then and who was already herself an adult, somebody named Margaret Doyson. She was working as a nurse for Dr. Otto Palmer, who was Steiner's personal physician pre-World War I. And she knew Rudolf Steiner from the office. And then she got interested in his teachings, and she found herself then living in Dornach and becoming a curative eurythmist, one of the first, and probably in many ways the very first anthroposophical nurse. And then destiny led her to work with the Scharf family, and she then became an anthroposophical nurse looking after Dr. Paul Scharf's older brother. And I got to know her, and I lived in the same house as she did. She was in her 80s when I came to know her, and she was filled with stories about Rudolf Steiner, the man, and what he was like, and the things he would say, and how she would get into Margaret Doyson, D-E-U-S-S-E-N. She was the niece of Paul, P-A-U-L, Doyson, who was the great German translator of the Bhagavad Gita. So she came from a long line of individuals with a deep interest in spirituality. So she would drive in a car with Rudolf Steiner, the only time she ever drove in a car in her life up to that point. And he would be sitting with somebody from the society. And he would say, Fräulein Doyson, close your ears. And she said, I still hold that secret. I would never share with you what he said, because he was talking about members and problems and branches and things like that. Very sweet. But she said that he told her that before World War I, when he traveled to Scandinavia to give lectures in Norway in particular, he could see in the earth the countenance of Odin. He could see the Norse god still active in not so much human affairs, but in the nature forces of Scandinavia. They still lived on. It was the last vestiges of the old clairvoyant forces. And there were individuals who saw them and knew them. And in the mystery drama, Steiner points to Felix Balda, who was based on an individual he knew, an herb gatherer, who also, in the 19th century and early 20th century, still had some of these old clairvoyant forces. But he said to her, when I return to those places now, after the war, it's gone. It is all gone. And he went through a period of time during the war, as I told you, that this was almost the greatest crisis in his life, and following the war, how will we be able to keep spiritual teaching alive? How can we keep training people and putting people on a path of self-development? There's nothing left to support this, that the old esoteric school that he had and the personal trainings that he gave. And he told Ehrenfried Pfeiffer that before the war, yes, he had initiated people. Pfeiffer asked him in 1919, did you ever initiate anyone? And Steiner said, yes, before the war, but not after. Couldn't do it anymore. And his big question was how to go forward. What is the right path now in the post-cataclysm time where the shadow of death hangs over us? And then he was asked, could you start a school? Okay, a school needs teachers. Well, he'll draw on the anthroposophists that he knows and hope that they'll find their way, and he'll give them a training. And then, as it were, again, from outside the question comes, and outside the teachers start to raise their hand and say, but what if I don't understand how, why do we teach the electric bell? They're not going to become repair people. You know, they're not going to be repairing electric bells. Why do we have to do this, Dr. Steiner? Shouldn't we be teaching them the principles of positive and negative electricity? And he's being asked these questions. And at some point, I believe, this is, you know, my conclusion, not his, he comes to realize this is the new path. Not the old mystery center, not the old mystery temple, but rather a new kind of schooling, that the Gertianum will become a school, that finally he will establish a school of spiritual science, as it were. And only at the very end of his life will he be able to share with us the revelation of the school of Michael, which is what brings the destiny of anthroposophists to be an anthroposophist on the earth, to find your fellow students in that school. He realizes that the training of teachers, the meditations that he gives the teachers, that this will be a path of spiritual development, not by going to an ashram, not by going to a temple, not by joining a tight little group of fellow esotericists, but by showing up every morning and starting to work. Your work will be a path of initiation, the future path. And suddenly what happens? Doctors ask him, could you help us transform modern medicine? Well, I'd have to retrain all of you. Okay. It'll take meditative work. Fine. Another job opening that's a path of initiation. Priests come to him. Farmers come to him year after year after year. It's like dominoes, but instead of falling, they're rising up. That the news has gotten out in the spiritual world. People are being inspired. It's time to ask Steiner that question so that he can answer it. And he can learn himself what the new path of initiation must be. This means that this unfolding candelabra, this igniting grade by grade, this path, this movement in between contraction and expansion, past and future and so on, this is a path for the teacher as well as the child. For the child, it means a path of incorporation, incorporating the etheric body, grades 1 through 3. Beginning to incorporate the astral body, grades 3 through 5, up to grade 6. Beginning to have an inkling of incorporating the ego in grade 8, and then in the high school years, a little spark of that. So the child is, as it were, pulling their bodies together, getting themselves fully incorporated and hopefully of a piece. And you see the way children dress today with their shirt tails hanging out or shirts made to hang out, with their underwear as outerwear, if they bother with either, and so on, everything baggy or everything really short and tight and so on, none of it fits. And that's an image of how the human being is putting together his or her bodies, what their clothing is like. We tend to wear plant substances like linen and cotton closest to our body, the etheric body. Then we can wear furs or wool one level away, the astral body. Then we can wear man-made substances. They won't have such a deleterious effect on us if they're fleece jackets or coats made of ripstop nylon. Ego, human activity, children, it's all mixed up. So this is very important too, how children dress. Do children come to school on time? Does a teacher come to school on time? Learning how to deal with space and time, the simplest things create this initiation experience. What happens first thing in the morning? The children are in the hall or out west where the weather's more temperate, they're outside. They line up two by two or one by one, and they shake hands with the teacher, and they cross that threshold. They must cross into a sacred space. And the teacher, who's there already, before she came in, she knows there's a hook outside. She's the only one who sees it. And she's hung up her everyday self. Her hang-ups have been hung up on a hook. And she walks into that room, and she is a different person. She is given by Steiner, as it were, an imagination of what it is to be a teacher. And at least for a couple of hours every morning, you can hold on to that, as long as you don't have to deal with parents in that time, which is also important. I always tell parents, stay away from the teacher first thing in the morning. Don't go up to that teacher and ask them questions. You know, what to give your dog who's sick or something like that. Ask them at the end of the day, but not at the beginning. They're in a different place. They're a different person. And they may not really be able to answer you. And then we shake the hand. Where do we shake the hand? Up here? Down here? The heart. It's coming. We see that the arm is an extra mobile rib, and it's coming from our center. And what kind of activity is? Rhythmical activity. Knowing that today's child probably didn't get enough sleep, or the sleep was fitful, knowing that they've probably been rushed, get dressed, we've only got 15 minutes, eat, go eat anything, take it with you, whatever, you know, and in a car, 30, 40, 60 miles an hour, depending on where they're coming from, and then, you know, out they go. And many schools now have walkways between the parking lot and the school. They don't allow parents to just drop the children off at the school. The children have to walk. So, you know, it's a little bit of activity at a human pace. And then we are, as it were, are, you know, jump-starting them, priming the pump, getting their own heart forces activated through ours, warming the hands of children that are cold, cooling the hands of children who are hot and sweaty and so on. Our hand is doing all of this. And I look at every child and I try to imagine, if I can't directly see, their angel above them. And I say something to the angel, which is going to be positive. You know, what a beautiful scarf you're wearing today. How's your dog doing? Is he feeling better? You take such good care of him. I'm so happy to hear that. And so on. Always the best, always the highest, and always trying to make eye contact. Always trying to bring the organs that perceive the light into activity. And anyone who's taught knows how difficult that is with so many children today, to get them to look up for more than a split second sometimes. And there you've got them. When they're, you know, you and their eyes have met, that astral connection through light is being made, and that will stay for a while, and you kind of keep trying to build on that. When my children were older, of course, it's going from there. Good morning. What, that shirt is very handsome. To a few grades higher. Good morning. Wow, that's cool. To good morning. yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, whatever you want, yeah. But actually, in the upper grades, I had many tall children who would do this when they were meeting me. Not in a kind of denigrating way, but automatically, they would do whatever they could not to be higher than I was. They couldn't handle that they were outgrowing me. Very, very interesting. So here you have, in a certain way, you are the guardian, hopefully the greater rather than the lesser guardian of the threshold. You're the guardian of the threshold at this new mystery center, but you are learning as much as they are. You know, you're, as they are incorporating more and more, you are rising up. And with each passing year, coming closer to having a sense, an inkling of spirit self, of life spirit, of spirit man. So it's a double-edged sword, like Michael we'd imagine he's holding, that serves the children and the teacher at the same time. One of the greatest tragedies in the Waldorf movement is the decision that was made in one school in the United States about 20 years ago. I'll give you the name and you can write to them. Shining Mountain Waldorf School in Boulder, Colorado. Very wonderful school to this day, a fantastic place in an incomparable setting. They decided that class teachers would only go up to grade 5 with their class. Grade 6, 7, and 8, there would be a rotating group of experts on adolescents, teachers who had proven themselves to be really good with the upper grades. One who is really good in science, another who's terrific in humanities, English, a third one who's kind of a jock and, you know, really can move with the kids and do all of these various things with them and so on. And with that, they opened the gates for specialists, specialties, and so on to become stronger and stronger. I call it the incredible shrinking class teacher phenomenon that more and more one finds in the lower grades. An English specialist comes in because the class teacher isn't trusted to teach language arts well enough. Definitely math teachers, even in first grade now, specialist math teachers, because the children are not learning math as well as their parents feel they should. It's always blamed on the parents, but fewer and fewer and fewer people, maybe at this point, 10% of teachers who start with a first grade are allowed by their school or their life circumstances to finish eighth grade with that class. That's how rare it is. Now you're doing two things. Number one, it's very difficult for the children because they and their parents have been told in the brochures, except in schools where that's now become the policy, not to do it. Otherwise, they're expecting eight grades. But even when they're told, you know, that's not our policy, we only go as far as grade 5, at the end of grade 5, the children are bereft. You know, you make a deep, deep connection with these children. That's nothing. You know who's really bereft? Who really doesn't understand what's going on? Who really gets confused and cannot be effective and withdraws from the school? The spiritual beings who were there on the first day of first grade and, as it were, stood there blessing that relationship, that mystery school, that initiation process for the teacher. We need initiates in our time, and Waldorf is one way of doing it. A medical office is another path. Christian community priesthood, and there are other paths, biodynamic agriculture. But Waldorf is major, it's big. And these spiritual beings are waiting. Okay, here's the sixth grade room, come on in. Where'd Joe go? Who are you? What are you doing here? Oh, you're an expert. I don't know what that means. I only know about relationships. I only know about people unfolding and developing and taking on higher members. I don't know what expert or information or getting good grades means. Now again, Steiner understood compromise was needed. But here we're not just compromising, here we are undermining. And I think we have to be able to distinguish between the two. We are denying spiritual beings their honor, their privilege of helping to affect the new mysteries on the earth. And this is true even when a class teacher is fired. And a good part of my work as a consultant has been trying to persuade schools not to fire individuals, being invited in with the express purpose of saying that teacher should be fired. That's why they want me there, so they can say, Eugene Schwartz said that. and instead saying, no, let's see what we can do to keep this relationship going, because it's more important than whether they've, you know, done well on this or that math test or something along those ways. And this is basically, I'm not misquoting, I'm paraphrasing Steiner here, that this is what he said was most important. He was not happy with the teachers when the third graders did not do well in their exams, and the sixth graders and the eighth graders, he said, this is sloppy teaching. There's no reason they shouldn't be doing just fine on those tests, but we have to know this is not important. But because it's important for the state, we should just be able to knock it off and get them going there. But this is not the basis of our education. This is not why we bring people in.